Welcome to The Deep Dive, the show where we don't just scratch the surface, we plunge right into the heart of fascinating topics.
Glad to be here.
Today, we're doing something pretty unique. We're not just discussing history, we're stepping onto a digital battlefield to peer into the strategic mind of a commander.
Right. Our mission for this deep dive is to unpack a detailed after-action report, or AAR, from a complex war game scenario.
And we're talking about the combined battle of Quatre Bras and Ligny, June 16th, 1815. This isn't just a historical recap, folks. It's a unique simulation.
Yeah, it puts two major Napoleonic battles onto one map, which gives both the French and Allied commanders some incredibly tough operational choices. It's quite something.
And you've sifted through a truly comprehensive AAR for us, haven't you?
I have. It's packed with initial battle plans, hourly updates of troop movements, and crucially, in-depth post-battle analysis.
So what you're getting is basically a shortcut to understanding the nuances of Napoleonic warfare as it plays out in a high-stakes scenario.
Exactly. We'll even touch on some specific house rules that influence the gameplay, like preventing those unrealistic zone of control kills, which push for a more historically grounded feel.
Right. Those custom rules can really shape tactical decisions, can't they?
Oh, absolutely. They force you to think differently.
Okay. Let's set the stage then, because the scenario itself introduces intriguing elements of uncertainty right from the very start.
It really does. For the French, their powerful I Corps, a massive force, 19,000 troops, only has a 15% probability of even being released to join the battle, just 15%.
Wow. And on the Allied side?
Well, there's the theoretical reinforcement of the Prussian Lafitte Bülow's corps, some 25,000 men broken into elements.
Another big contingent.
But with a meager 5% chance of actually arriving. 5%.
That raises a fundamental question, doesn't it? How do you even begin to plan when critical reinforcements are that uncertain?
It's incredibly difficult. These contingencies are absolutely central to the strategic thinking we'll explore. It's June 16th, 1815.
And we're about to see the high-stakes decisions and what-ifs that played out on this digital battlefield where every single decision had a ripple effect.
Get ready.
So with all that swirling uncertainty, what did the Allied battle plans look like? I mean, given the French held the initiative.
Right. The Allied side's planning was primarily responsive. They were anticipating French maneuvers rather than trying to dictate the flow early on.
Okay, let's start with the Quatre Bras sector then. Wellington's dilemma.
Exactly. So in what they called scenario one, if the French only committed their two corps and the third cavalry.
Which was, you know, a possibility.
Right. Wellington's army aimed to hold the line at the crossroads, particularly along a strategic stream. The key here was using the Allied infantry's numbers.
Anchor the flanks.
Yes, anchoring both flanks on wooded terrain and holding the center behind that stream. It was a smart move to negate the French's powerful cavalry, roughly 9,000 sabers.
Keep them off the open ground. Makes sense.
Exactly. Prevent them from deploying effectively.
But then there was scenario two. The nightmare scenario, where the French I Corps actually links up with Marshal Ney. How dramatically would that force a change?
Oh, that would be a complete game changer. If the French gained superiority in infantry, cavalry, and artillery, well, holding that initial position #1 would become simply unbearable.
So a total rethink needed.
Totally. The plan dramatically shifted. They'd hold position #1 only long enough to confirm the French I Corps arrival, then execute a risky tactical retreat to position #2.
And position #2 offered better ground.
Yes, more obstructed terrain, much better for dealing with French cavalry.
And a retreat like that, under pressure from superior cavalry, sounds incredibly dangerous.
It is. Retreating across open ground with better cavalry chasing you. It's one of the riskiest maneuvers. Heavy losses would be expected.
So they had a backup for the backup.
They did. As a final provision, an emergency retreat to position #3 behind an impassable creek and covering the main exit zone was put in place.
It really highlights a deep understanding of how quickly things could go south, doesn't it? The need for multiple fallback positions.
Definitely. Contingency planning was vital.
Okay, over in the Ligny sector, the Prussians had maybe slightly more aggressive ambitions.
A bit, yeah. In their scenario one, so that's French I Corps going to Quatre Bras and Bülow's Corps not arriving.
Right.
Forces were roughly balanced. Prussian infantry numbers were offset by the sheer quality of French infantry, plus their better artillery and cavalry.
So what was the plan then?
In this scenario, an offensive action by the Prussian army was actually considered deploying infantry in an extended line for defense in depth.
Interesting. But that wasn't their main hope, was it?
No, the base scenario for Prussian planning, the one they really hoped for, was scenario two. French Xi's corps heads to Ligny, and critically, Hy-Vee Prussian corps arrives.
That gives them the numbers.
A significant infantry advantage, yes, and that shaped a much more ambitious approach. Their I Corps had clear objectives: attack Ligny with two brigades.
The meat grinder approach.
Exactly. Aiming to turn it into a prolonged attritional fight to wear down French the Fifth Corps infantry, draw in the elite French guard, and hold Ligny to disrupt any French advance towards the windmill.
And Saint-Mande.
Hold Saint-Amand as a forward position, establishing a new line between Ligny and Bray if Saint-Amand was lost. Lots of moving parts.
Wow, that's complex and aggressive. What about the Prussian Third Corps in this scenario?
Their job was to hold the Prussian left flank, send one infantry brigade to help at Ligny, and be ready to maneuver aggressively.
To draw French forces away.
Yeah, to draw the French the Sixth Corps if no direct attack came their way. Or, if they were attacked, deploy for a delaying action, falling back north while waiting for Brulot's the Four.
Flexible.
Very. And crucially, if this left flank became the main French attack sector, elements of the Second and I Corps were ready to redeploy in support.
Okay, and the Seine Corps had an even more audacious plan, right? Holding Bry Village with one brigade.
But then launching an offensive with three brigades and cavalry to defeat French the Third Corps before French the Corps even arrived.
That's fascinating. And this wasn't just about their own sector, was it? It tied directly into helping Wellington. Can you walk us through that connection?
Absolutely. This attack was explicitly designed to draw French I Corps away from Quatre Bras.
Oh, so relieving Wellington's vulnerable position.
Precisely. And preventing that dangerous retreat across open terrain we just talked about, it's a perfect illustration of how, in this combined war game, a tactical move here.
Could have huge operational consequences over there.
Exactly. It's high-level strategic thinking connecting the two battlefields.
Okay, so the battle plans are laid out, very complex, lots of ifs. The real question is, how did they stand up to the fog of war? Let's plunge into the initial hours, turns one through four. Where did the first blows land?
Right. In the Quatre Bras sector, the French moved swiftly. They gained a foothold across the stream, isolating Jemiancourt pretty quickly.
But then something surprising happened.
Yes, they pushed frontally. They neglected to outflank the Allied positions, which seemed like the obvious move.
And that cost them.
Big time. This wasn't just heavy losses around 1,000 French dead or wounded by turn five compared to maybe 200 Allied casualties.
Wow, 5-1.
It immediately highlighted a crucial tactical blunder. Trying to push tightly packed, formed battalions directly against scattered, hard-to-hit skirmishers without proper prep.
A costly mistake right out of the gate.
Avoidable, too. It set a really negative tone for their early attacks. The French eventually stopped their advance to wait for more artillery.
And the Allies got reinforcements.
Yes, the timely arrival of the Brunswick contingent further stabilized the Allied line. That was crucial.
So early on, it sounds like the French commander maybe missed some significant opportunities to capitalize on their initial advantage. Did the AAR really pick up on these?
It did, yeah. Operationally, the French could have sent a significant infantry and cavalry force around the Allied left near a pond.
Which would have done what?
Dramatically extended the Allied front, forced a major redeployment, put them under real pressure, or they could have sent the 6th Division and cavalry through Bossu Woods.
Threatening the other flanks.
Right, threatening the Allied right flank by turn eight. That could have potentially forced the Allied commander to abandon the crossroads altogether.
Opening the door for French cavalry.
Exactly. Letting them operate aggressively in the Allied rear. These were major strategic avenues left unexplored.
So even more aggressive, potentially decisive moves were on the table but weren't taken.
Tactically, too, French cavalry could have crossed the stream much earlier, between Jemiancourt and the pond, you know, to threaten the Allied skirmish line.
Even if it caused some disorder.
Yeah, even at that cost. Then follow up immediately with infantry in column formation, that's the deep, narrow attack shape to punch through the 2nd Dutch Division before Allied reinforcements arrived.
And support from other units.
Furthermore, a supporting attack from skirmishers of the 9th Infantry Division could have kept pressure on the Allied right. The key French objective in that first hour should have been
disrupt the Dutch.
throw the 2nd Dutch Division off balance, stretch their units thin, disrupt their command. They really didn't achieve that. Lost Prussia's initiative.
Okay, meanwhile, over in the Ligny sector, things were also heating up.
Oh, yes. The French Third Corps attacked Saint-Amand but was repelled. And again, costly losses, 1,000 French versus 250 Prussian casualties.
Making the same mistake, formed battalions against skirmishers.
Exactly the same mistake. Pushing formed battalions against skirmishers without first disrupting their cohesion. It seems like a recurring tactical blind spot for the French early on.
Very telling. And the French the first.
Surprisingly, they held back from a direct assault on Ligny itself. Instead, they deployed skirmishers and just bombarded Prussian positions, caused lighter casualties, around 150 Prussians.
Or the Prussians.
The Push and the Second Corps began advancing towards Wagnoli just as they planned, showing clear strategic intent.
And the reinforcements. Bulow.
Critically, elements of Bulow's the First Corps 1 Division, about 6,500 men, began to arrive, though other divisions were delayed. Still, a significant development.
This sounds like the Prussians were already starting to get a clearer picture of what the French were trying to do.
They were. Intelligence reports suggested the French intended to launch their main attack on the Prussian right flank.
Using which units?
Elements of the 3rd Corps, the 7th Infantry Division of 2 Corps, and the formidable Imperial Guard. There was also a planned supporting attack at Tongrin, and only that frontal push at Quatre Bras with 2 Corps and the 3rd Cavalry Corps.
And the assumption about French Corps.
That they were marching to support the main Ligny attack.
Okay, now this is where the genius, or perhaps the folly of the French plan, really comes into focus. This plan made it incredibly difficult to actually use their big cavalry advantage, right?
Absolutely. Picture this. About 11,000 French horsemen were essentially tied down on their right flank.
Doing what?
Facing a defensively deployed Prussian III Corps behind broken, difficult terrain, which meant infantry would have to clear the way first. A slow process.
And connecting this to the bigger picture, the force mismatch.
Well, this sector's French forces, roughly 23,000 infantry and 98 guns, face a significantly larger Prussian force of around 40,000 infantry and 72 guns.
So a breakthrough was highly unlikely.
Yeah.
Almost a waste of those cavalry.
Pretty much. Plus, both French, the 5 and 5th Corps, lacked enough light infantry, so they struggled to screen effectively or soften up enemy positions beforehand.
And the main attack zone.
The main French attack on the Prussian right also lacked cavalry superiority. It was 6,500 French versus 6,200 Prussian horsemen. Basically even numbers there. A real mismatch of forces and terrain deployment.
And time was a major factor too, wasn't it? That famous French Guard flank march?
Hugely time-consuming, especially for their heavy artillery. It was estimated to need at least 12 turns, that's hours in game time, just to arrive and deploy.
Which effectively have the impact of their best artillery during the crucial early and mid-battle phases.
Exactly. That's a massive strategic issue if your elite units aren't brought to bear effectively when needed most.
Okay, so armed with this critical intelligence, the Prussians clearly had to make some significant adjustments to their battle plan from turn 5 onwards. What did they do?
Precisely. To counter the identified French intent, they issued new orders. For Sector 1, the Prussian 7th Corps was told to redeploy north of Brie.
Reinforced.
Heavily. 5 artillery batteries from Ercourt, 3 from 3rd Corps, and 2,500 cavalry from Ercourt. Their objective, attack Wagnoli and defeat the estimated 2 French infantry and 1 cavalry division before the French Guard arrived.
Timing was key again. Expected Guard arrival.
Around turn 9 or 10, and any arriving 4B Corps elements move to the center as general reserves or to support that 2 Corps attack.
And for Sector 2, the center.
Personally, hold the line from Saint-Amand to Ligny, and if possible, press the French the 3rd Corps.
To do what?
To force the French Guard to reinforce Saint-Amand, thus disrupting its march further north. They were trying to pull the Guard off its intended path, bog it down.
Clever. And Sector 3, the Prussian left.
3 Corps.
Hold a wide front from Ligny to Tongrin and adopt a deliberate defensive posture. Give ground only grudgingly if attacked. Buy time. Now let's deep dive into their defensive strategies, particularly for I Corps holding the center. Saint-Amand to Ligny, they had 2 lines planned.
Yes, a forward line, marked orange on their maps apparently, almost a tripwire. The objective was to delay the French advance as long as possible.
The meat grinder zone.
Exactly. Turn the battle into an attritional fight within Saint-Amand and Ligny, leveraging the Prussians' numerical advantage in skirmishers and infantry, artillery positioned behind for fire support.
And then the main defensive line.
Further back, marked yellow, securing key victory points. Its flanks were anchored on the obstructed terrain of Saint-Amand-la-Haye and Ligny. Good solid anchors.
And the center.
Held by infantry squares on a reverse slope. That's crucial, facing away from the enemy, hidden from artillery sight until the French crested the hill. Huge advantage.
Plus a big battery.
A grand battery, yeah. Mass cannons planned on elevated ground behind this reverse slope for commanding fire.
So the overall intent was disruption. Forced the French to keep stopping, repositioning their artillery.
Hoping they'd simply run out of time for a proper final assault before dusk. The difficult part, of course, was executing an orderly retreat under fire from the forward line to the main line.
Tricky. Okay, what about two a corps on the right flank? Vagnoli and North. Similar two-line plan.
Similar concept, yes. Their forward line involved one brigade seizing Vagdelay village worth 50 critical victory points, primarily to deny French cavalry that open ground nearby.
Anchor the flank again.
Right flank anchored on obstructed terrain further north, with two brigades and cavalry held in reserve, artillery providing crucial fire support.
And the main defensive line sounds even more formidable there. The wall of lead.
It was designed to be just that. The incoming 5E Prussian Corps was tasked with forming dense infantry formations, battalions of 700-plus men packed in continuous lines reinforced by skirmishers.
Creating an impenetrable barrier against cavalry.
Exactly. Infantry brigades arranged in two successive lines, spaced out just enough three hexes in the game to allow concentrated, devastating fire on any advancing French columns.
Layers of defense.
Three layers. Prussian cavalry would be a mobile reserve in a third line. The intended frontage was substantial, 20-25 map sections, allowing for this densely layered, deep defense.
A truly formidable setup, designed to absorb and counter any French thrust.
And supported by a lot of firepower, several positions were identified to accommodate maybe 120 to 140 guns, a powerful supporting fire base.
So operationally, taking Wagnoli early was critical.
Absolutely crucial. Establishing that forward line and securing Wagnoli gave them operational depth and bought precious time for the 4FP Corps to arrive and get fully deployed into that main line.
Okay, meticulous plans. Let's see how the battle actually unfolded during turn 6 through 16. Back to Ligny, Prussian right flank at Wagnoli.
Yeah.
Prussian's second corps assaulted on turn 6.
They did, but preparation took longer than expected. Deploying units, dealing with enemy skirmishes, it all slowed things down.
And there was a missed opportunity.
Yeah, the Prussian Landwehr Cavalry Reserve Infantry, but they had some cavalry too, actually cut down French skirmish companies, even captured a French brigade commander's post.
Ouch. A reminder to stack your leaders carefully in war games.
Definitely. But the Prussians lacked formed infantry right there to exploit this breakthrough and really punch through. A fleeting chance lost.
Then the French Guard arrived.
From turn 9, yes. French Guard units started arriving. The young guard counterattacked Wagnoli, leading to a prolonged, brutal firefight within the village. Sections changed hands multiple times, back and forth.
And the French Guard cavalry tried to envelop the flank north of Wagnoli. Did that prove decisive?
Not at all, surprisingly. The Prussians successfully deployed half-battalion squares that compact all around defense against cavalry.
Supported by artillery.
Crucially, yes. And the French cavalry lacked their own infantry or horse artillery support. That was key. It meant the Prussians could halt their advance with concentrated fire.
So the Guard cavalry got stuck.
Pretty much. They eventually withdrew by turn 16 after losing nearly 100 horsemen. It really highlights a critical tactical lesson. Unsupported cavalry, even elite Guard cavalry, can be neutralized by prepared infantry squares with artillery backing. A completely wasted thrust.
Okay, shifting to the Prussian center at Saint-Amand. The French 6th Corps began arriving there.
Yes, threatening the Prussian left flank near the village. And the French commander skillfully established that grand battery we talked about.
The 100-gun one.
About 100 cannons, yeah. Positioned southeast of Saint-Amand, firing enfilade, hitting the Prussian defenders along their exposed flank. Devastating crossfire.
Then came the second French attack on Saint-Amand itself.
On turn 10, another frontal assault by 3rd Corps, but this time supported by the converging 6th Corps. Despite desperate Prussian Landwehr counterattacks, the French pushed forward.
But the Prussians hit back.
On turn 14, Prussian cavalry counterattacked, broke through French lines, and eliminated two of those damaging French batteries. A bold move.
Then more fighting in the village.
A really desperate effort on turn 15, three Prussian Landwehr regiments launched a bayonet counterattack right in the village. Heavy losses on both sides, and it disrupted the Prussian second line formation.
So by turn 16, the Prussians had to fall back.
Yes, they were forced to retreat to their main defensive line behind Saint-Amand.
But they still considered their objective achieved.
They did. They had turned Saint-Amand into that meat grinder, inflicted around 4,500 French casualties versus maybe 3,000 of their own. they'd effectively worn down the French III Corps.
And bought time.
Crucial time. Holding Saint-Amand for over 4 hours, that's 16-plus turns, limited the French Grand Battery's opportunity to reposition and re-engage the second defensive line, effectively.
Plus, it helped the Prussian right flank.
Exactly. This act of defense also relieved pressure on the right by drawing French Guard elements into the Saint-Amand fight, pulling them away from Wagnalli.
So looking at the French assault on Saint-Amand again, operationally, diverting VI Corps was correct.
Correct move. Yeah, they identified the weak point. But tactically...
Still flawed.
Still flawed. An artillery battery could have been set up there much earlier. Old Guard batteries should have been assigned there sooner, instead of that long march to the far left.
And the infantry assaults.
Still costly. Columns hitting skirmishers in the village. A less costly, probably more effective option. Send French skirmishers first to disorder the Prussians, then follow with bayonet charges. Classic tactics. But they didn't execute it well.
Okay, critical question.
Yeah.
What about Farvey Bulow's corps? That 5% chance, did they make it?
They did. After a grueling wait and some truly abysmal luck on the dice.
How bad?
14 consecutive failed arrival rolls, starting at 5%, increasing by 1% each turn. Just terrible luck. But finally.
Finally.
By turn 16, Bulow's cavalry, about 3,500 strong, rode onto the field. They arrived 1.5 hours march, six turns away from the Prussian left flank.
Wow. And the impact.
Massive. Their arrival, combined with the fact the French hadn't attacked the Prussian left, allowed the Prussians to redeploy significant forces from the Third Corps to the center.
Freeing up troops.
Infantry brigades, artillery, cavalry, all sent to bolster the main line. Only one regiment left covering the far left flank. And at the same time, French Ayres Corps infantry and light cavalry were finally spotted marching towards the French left. More critical intelligence for the Prussians.
So while Ligny was exploding with action, the Quatre Bras sector settled into an unexpectedly quiet strategic holding pattern from turn 6 to 18. That seems odd.
It does seem odd, but this quiet became a critical drain on French resources.
How so?
It meant the French commander had essentially tied down an enormous force, approximately 5,500 cavalry, more than double the Allied horsemen there, with almost no offensive opportunities. A huge asset, neutralized.
While the Allies.
British reinforcements continued to arrive steadily. Mioncourt Chateau, a key strong point, held out against five or six French assaults before finally falling.
So the French were just sitting there.
Mostly assumed a defensive posture, despite their cavalry advantage. The Allies, meanwhile, even considered a limited tactical offensive near Gemiancourt, using the terrain to negate the French cavalry, timed with their own reinforcements arriving.
So that quiet sector actually worked against the French in the bigger picture.
Absolutely. It neutralized a powerful French cavalry arm that could, and probably should, have been used more decisively elsewhere, perhaps at Ligny.
Okay, let's fast forward to turn 17 through 23, the climax. French momentum at Ligny seems to just collapse here.
It really does. On turn 17, Saint-Amand was finally lost, and the Prussians began their planned withdrawal to the main defensive line, under continuous French artillery fire, mind you.
How long did the withdrawal take?
Four turns. Completed by turn 21, they established that new defensive line exactly as planned, behind the village on the reverse slope.
And the French knew time was running out.
Clearly. By turn 22, they were short on time before dusk. They launched a final, desperate effort. Swarms of skirmishers pressing the new front, and a simultaneous assault at Ligny itself, a last gasp.
Felt a bit uncoordinated, you said.
It did seem that way. More desperation than a well-planned final push.
But the Prussians had a powerful counterpunch waiting, didn't they?
Oh, yes. From their freshly deployed gun line, those 100-plus Prussian batteries, now with commanding line of sight from the high ground, bombarded the advancing French columns. Then, Prussian lancers swept forward from behind that reverse slope.
A cavalry charge.
Cut down nearly 500 French skirmishers, overran a horse battery, defeated several assault columns, and even took a French divisional commander prisoner. A devastating counterstroke.
And infantry, too.
Simultaneously, the Prussians counterattacked at both Ligny and Saint-Amand-la-Haye with dense columns. We're talking 1,600, 1,800 bayonets apiece. Threw the French into utter confusion.
Plus pressure elsewhere.
And to further burden the French headquarters, a full-scale offensive was ordered over at Quatre Bras. British infantry advancing. A coordinated multi-front pressure campaign just when the French were reeling.
The clock was cruelly running out for the French now. It was turn 23.
Only four turns left until dusk, when visibility would drop sharply to just four hexes. The French simply had no time to organize another combined arms offensive against that strong Saint-Amand-Ligny defensive line.
And Bülow's corps.
On the Prussian right flank, Bülow's the Fifth Corps continued to arrive and take up defensive positions. Presenting yet another formidable force, the French had extremely limited time to even try and break through.
So the outcome was?
Clear-cut. A minor French defeat was called at the ceasefire. A hard-fought but ultimately decisive Allied victory in this simulated battle.
Okay, let's unpack this with our after-action analysis. What were the key insights from this war game, looking back now?
Well, one key factor, perhaps surprisingly, was the opponent's play style. The French commander proved reasonably cautious.
Cautious. How did that play out?
It was evident from several decisions. Halting the Quatre Bras attack early due to casualties and bad ground. Ending the initial Saint-Amand push without overextending his infantry.
And crucially, offering the ceasefire at the end.
Exactly. Offering a ceasefire rather than assaulting the newly formed Prussian defensive line. Attacking that strong position, supported by that 70-gun grand battery and poised cavalry, it would likely have risked the total collapse of the French center. Sometimes, caution is the better part of valor.
And it seems that key flaw in the initial French plan truly materialized, didn't it? The Old Guard flank march.
It just took too long. That's a critical observation. By the time they reached the far left flank, the Prussian Second Corps had already established that strong forward position at Wagnalee.
So even though Wagnalee was eventually lost,
it bought crucial depth and time for the Prussians to absorb the French pressure. The Guard arrived too late in the day to effectively impact the final outcome, a perfect example of how grand plans can unravel due to misjudging timelines and enemy responses.
What about specific tactical missteps we saw during the battle itself?
Well, surprisingly, the elite Old Guard infantry was never committed in a major way at Wagnalee, aside from minor skirmishes.
Really? They just sat there?
Pretty much. It allowed that four-hour firefight to grind on without a decisive advantage being pressed. Their full deployment could have shifted that sector significantly much earlier.
And the Guard cavalry blunder?
That appearance of the French light Guard cavalry on the Prussian right, neutralized for hours by just two Landwehr regiments in half-battalion squares, supported by two artillery batteries.
Because they had no support of their own.
Exactly. Without infantry or artillery support, the French cavalry achieved almost nothing. Spent hours just sitting there under Prussian bombardment, a completely wasted thrust. It's a classic mistake, really trying to use cavalry alone against prepared, supported infantry.
And the timing of other cavalry deployments?
Generally too late. While French cavalry was deployed in the final phase, forcing Prussians into square,
it didn't achieve much.
It came far too late in the day for a truly decisive impact. The Prussians had ample reserves by then to rotate out depleted battalions, negating any major breakthroughs. The moment had passed.
So if we distill it down, what was the Prussian recipe for success here? How did they pull it off?
Fundamentally, the Prussian army effectively fought a disciplined war of attrition at those planned forward positions in Saint-Amand and Wagnalee.
Denying the French cavalry open ground.
Across the entire front, Quatre Bras, Saint-Amand, Ligny, and Wagnalee, they funneled the French into choke points, used the terrain, and bled them dry through tactical defense and timely counterattacks.
And the French artillery, especially those powerful guard batteries, a missed opportunity.
Huge missed opportunity. They could have had a much greater impact if pushed forward earlier, particularly into the Saint-Amand sector, instead of spending most of the battle marching slowly to the Prussian right flank, arriving too late to influence the final outcome. It's a powerful weapon that was seriously underutilized.
A critical observation indeed. We've seen how crucial initial plans are, but also adapting to an opponent's style, the timing of reinforcements or lack thereof.
And the precise application of combined arms. Getting infantry, cavalry, and artillery working together at the right time and place.
Absolutely. This deep dive into just one after-action report reveals that even in simulated warfare, the core principles of strategy, tactical execution, and understanding the ripple effects of every decision from a cavalry charge to artillery positioning are paramount.
They really are.
Yeah.
And as you reflect on this, maybe think about how the what-ifs and alternative choices we explored, those decisions that weren't made, the opportunities not seized,
how they fundamentally shaped this outcome.
Exactly. How might understanding these micro-decisions and the chain reactions they create, whether in a simulated battle like this or a historical event or even, you know, planning in your own life, how might that change how you approach strategy and decision-making? Something to ponder.